Now that we've settled in, we will go into the second half, and we want to welcome to the microphone Lucille T. Seibert.
I'd like to read. These are from, is this on?
I'll leave it to your side, but I won't.
That's fine.
Okay. We can't hear you yet.
Whoops. It's hard to read to two rooms.
There's two microphones.
That's a good idea, two mics. Can you all hear me? Okay. The first poem I'd like to read is All You Ever Wanted to Know About the Cookie, But Were Afraid to Ask. Health food cookies are manipulative, passive-aggressive, and deceitful. They look like what they aren't, trick you into eating them, then get even by tasting lousy. I bit into a chocolate chip cookie last night, but the chips turned out not to be chocolate, and the main ingredient was obviously sawdust. Now, I want to lay some important facts squarely on the table. First of all, cookies are a time-honored tradition and not to be messed with. They were invented millions of years ago. You need to be aware of the role of the cookie in the total life experience. When there are children in the home, cookies should be stored in a crockery jar with a noisy lid in the corner of the kitchen near the living room doorway. This enables the small child to sneak cookies before dinner when the mother's back is turned, thus developing qualities of gluttony, deceitfulness, and stealth in the sensitive child. When the child is grown, she may become aware of these nasty traits and work to overcome them, thus developing character. You do want your child to develop character, don't you? Now, a properly constructed cookie, if eaten by the plateful, should initiate feelings of sinfulness and guilt. It should taste absolutely delicious. It should be fattening. It should contain sugar, which rots the teeth. If you ever, by mistake, as I did, bite into a health food cookie, you have several choices. You may discard it as not being worth your time and consideration. Or, amazed at the information your taste buds relay to your brain, you may take a second, tiny bite, then discard it as not being worth your time and consideration. Or you may chop it up in a bowl and pour milk over it. Breakfast cereal is supposed to be nutritious. The Cat and the Crow. Little noises around my house are calling me to listen. Birds calling in the yard. The cat lapping milk in the kitchen. A weed tree creaking against the fence. My cat will never climb that tree. Thorns grow on its branches. From somewhere in the trees on the other side of the high wood fence, a crow is calling, "Caw! Caw!" I've never seen its black coat. Solitaire cards sit idle on the table where I sometimes write. Thunder rolls beyond the creaking thorn tree, beyond the birds calling their mates. A distant man shouts, "Yo!" calling his children in from thunder. The cat sleeps undisturbed on a stack of boxes where reams of paper are waiting for poems. The crow is silent, ceased her cawing. Thunder claps near, wind blows the rain, and I have closed the west window and moved to the center of the house. The crow is silent. She watches me from a hidden window, thinking her thoughts into my mind. Roman Fountain. I like to stack cups in small bowls under the faucet in the kitchen sink and run a thin stream of water. It makes a lovely fountain, such as you might see in Rome. I can't afford to go to Rome. I watch for the exact moment when the water spills from the first cup into the second, into the third, into the fourth, into the bowl, onto the dinner plate. If I become distracted, I empty all the water, restack the cups and bowls, and start all over again. Allen Ginsberg, Oakland, 11-9-89. We came to hear Allen Ginsberg. The place was packed. Where is he? I asked. Up there on the right, someone said as I left my seat. He doesn't sign books. Lynn Emanuel stood on the stage, calling through the crowd to Ginsberg and yelling for me to sit down. I ignored her, climbed the stairs on the right, his fattest book under my arm. I found him explaining to skinny guys waving thin books and scraps of white paper. He didn't give autographs. Then he saw me and the fat book and signed it in three places and asked me in a low voice, "Can you get me out of here? Just follow me and don't stop. Let me know when you're ready." "I'm ready, let's go," he said. And quickly I headed down, not looking back, past the stage, and heard Lynn Emanuel, "We are happy to have with us tonight, Allen," as I slid silently into my chair.